to the Crooked Forest podcast. I'm your host, Holly Noonan, and we will be discussing affordable housing for sensitive people and all aspects of paradigm-changing trends in natural building and how it relates to your health, like living in neighborhoods that are designed specifically for the microbiome. We'll also explore creative solutions for affordable home ownership, like community land trusts and cooperatives, and delve into permaculture and regenerative systems design. If that's what you're interested in, you're in the right place, and we're glad you're here. Joining us today for the podcast is Nora Oreste. Nora is a building biologist who, together with her husband Chris, is creating a small retreat center outside of Austin, Texas, that can host people who are chemically and environmentally sensitive. The project, called Flourish Here, is working towards completing the first of six hempcrete homes and will feature a five-bedroom retreat house, a comprehensive water catchment system, and wellness amenities with a Tadalact sauna. I visited her project in December on the Role Model road trip, and I'm looking forward to following along in the development process. Welcome, Nora.
Thank you. Thank you, Holly. Great to be here.
All right. Let's start, Nora, by finding out a little bit about how you became aware of environmental sensitivities. As I understand it, your mom became ill while you were in college. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. My mom got really sick when I was in college, and nobody could figure out why. She went to several doctors. I couldn't figure out why she was feeling so ill. And by ill, I mean she was in bed and she couldn't get out of bed suddenly one day. And she couldn't do all the things that she normally did, like go to work, go to the grocery store. She had this overwhelming fatigue. It was finally that one doctor told her that she might be allergic to her environment. And from there, she started to investigate, you know, what made her sick. And she discovered that there was mold in her ducting that she was being exposed to every day. But also, where she was working, the university she was working for had basically bought an abandoned building and was remodeling it. And that abandoned building was really water damaged. Okay. So between those exposures, between the mold in her home and her office, along with all the renovation that was being done, exposing her to high levels of VOCs, and this was 25 years ago before most people really knew about the effects of VOCs, high VOCs. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I became aware of all this, her journey and discovering this, and then eventually going to the Environmental Health Center in Dallas to get treatment. She's doing well right now. She's about 75%. Like I said, this has been kind of the last 25 years she's been, this has been part of her life and our life. And so we are all really sensitive to it. You know, our families are very sensitive to her sensitivities.
Yeah, it's a big deal. It's a steep learning curve. And just, as an aside for listeners who might be dealing with something similar, it's actually the University of Texas in San Antonio that came up with the Breezy and the Queasy questionnaires that help with the differential diagnosis for diagnosing this kind of environmental illness. So if anybody's curious about it, Google BREESI or QEESI and the University of Texas at San Antonio, and you'll find these metrics that you can bring to your doctor. So I'm so sorry, and I'm glad she's doing a little better. So that experience of you dealing with your mom's illness really had an impact on your ideas about what a healthy building is. Is that right?
Absolutely. Learning that, the things that we put in our homes, bring into our homes, that our homes are made out of can, affect our health. is really, like, I guess, impactful in the second half of my life, you know. You know, we do everything we can, obviously, to protect her, but also, you know, us, you know, my children, to, you know, make sure we have an environment that's healthy for them.
I'm so glad. So what you found building biology, and you decided to become a building biologist. Can you tell me about that process of finding that and your interest in it?
Yeah. So, the way I found it is, I was researching how to create, you know, a healthy environment. At the time, this was about seven, eight years ago. My husband and I were running an Airbnb in Austin. And I really enjoyed doing it. I enjoyed meeting all the people that we welcomed. I enjoyed managing everything with our small rentals. And I thought to myself, I would really love to create a safe, healthy space for people like my mom, you know, that, that can't really go to hotels. They can't really go to Airbnbs either, because a lot of them are just, you know, full of mold most
and
a lot
chemicals.
Of the time.
Yeah.
And chemicals, lots of Febreze and, you know, air fresheners. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're just not run. You know, they're meant to be economically mm-hmm. viable. So, mm-hmm. so a lot of times they're run really cheaply mm-hmm. And not maintained very well. And so in my search to kind of figure out, you know, how do you do this? How do you create a healthy space? I ran into the Building Biology Institute, and I was like, wow, look at all the things they show you how to do, how to create, you know, great indoor air quality, and how to pick, you know, healthy building materials, and how to, you know, mitigate for EMF. And so I just decided to launch into their new build program, and yeah, that's kind of how I found it and became super just interested. And you know, once you kind of dive into the curriculum, you realize that, wow, there's so much to be done for the built environment. Mm. You know, it's not just about keeping chemicals out, but it's also about the materials you build with. It's mm-hmm. about the finishes you use. It's, you know, it's about just kind of every detail of the built environment. And I just became obsessed.
Obsessed. I love it. Me too. Wonderful. We love that. How long was the program?
I think it took me about a year and a half to mm-hmm. get through everything. Mm-hmm. Part of it is in-person, you know, seminars that you go to. Mm-hmm. And then there's some basically home like work that you do around things to turn in to the instructors and your final projects and things like that.
Is so, this Paula Baker yeah. Laporte's, or is she yeah. affiliated with this somehow?
Yes. Yeah, so she is, I guess the main instructor
okay.
there. And believe she wrote most of the curriculum. Mm-hmm. The curriculum is based on her book, Prescriptions for a Healthy Home, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. is her book, and the course is, you know, kind of based on everything she's learned mm-hmm. from the last 25 years, mm-hmm. and they're based on principles of building biology from, I guess it was a German kind of school of thought.
That's what I thought. Baubiologie.
Started in Germany.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And Paula Baker Laporte is an architect who had some environmental sensitivities herself. Is that right?
Right, and that's how she became familiar with building biology, mm-hmm. Is because she got sick from the buildings that she was in, that she was designing and building, and not, from all the processed materials in there, she became sick.
I tell you what, progress happens when the professionals get sick. You know,
totally.
I'm a member of the International Society for Environmentally Acquired Illnesses that started in Tucson, Arizona. And that's a consortium of 350 doctors and medical professionals who have had their own health problems. And so these are doctors that won't gaslight you if you have any environmental sensitivity. crazy. So, you know, it's so hard to go through this process, the steep learning curve of environmental illness. All right. So how did you and your husband decide on this 16-acre property that you found outside of Austin? Is it in Dripping Springs?
Right. It's in Dripping Springs, Texas, which is about an hour west of Austin.
Okay.
And so it was kind of by accident. We hadn't planned originally, you know, we wanted to create, you know, healthy spaces for people with chemical intolerances, environmental sensitivities. Mm-hmm. And we were planning to do that just in town, in Austin, where we were living at the time, and build like a little back house, you know, using building biology principles.
Okay.
But a friend of ours suggested we look into coming out to Dripping Springs. Mm-hmm. And so we were shown a property that was a friend of a friend that fell through. But at that point, Pandora's box had already been open. And we had bigger visions than doing just one back house. Mm-hmm. We wanted to do several. Mm-hmm. And given that the land at the time here was a lot more affordable than Austin, we decided to move to Dripping Springs. And it wasn't Dripping Springs that we just looked at. We looked at other cities kind of around outside of Austin. Mm-hmm. But Dripping Springs really kind of called to us, mm-hmm. in that like moving out west is just a little bit drier than Austin, a little bit less rain than Austin. We're not quite into the desert, you know, area of West Texas, but we're in Central Texas, where it's just, like I said, a little bit drier. The ground is not so, clay-like like it is in east of Austin. And so I felt like all of these things kind of were really good for what we wanted to do. In addition, the property that we looked at had all rain catchment on it. And so that to me was a plus, not having a well and being able to really capture the, like it was already here. And so we kind of experienced living with rainwater and we love it. And So that's kind of how it came.
I see. So you guys are living in the 5-bedroom house that will become the retreat center main house. Is that right?
Right. Uh-huh. We're living here now.
And that one already had the water catchment set up for it? Oh, now I remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Tell us about the vision. Like I came and visited your property. It's astounding. It's gorgeous. It's very clean. It's very quiet. Tell us what you're planning.
So we have plans. So we worked with, when we first moved here, we worked with a permaculture designer. Mm-hmm. And they helped us, you know, look at our property and figure out what would be best, you know, for the property. Mm-hmm. And so with his design proposed, we do 6 cottages. And we've got a design for all 6 cottages. Along with rain catchment, we've got a 50,000-gallon large cistern. Wow. That we'll be using for all of our rain catchment that will come off of all of the cottages. Mm-hmm. So in addition to the 6 cottages, the retreat house will be renovated. Mm-hmm. To host larger groups. Then we'll also have wellness amenities. Mm-hmm. Like we're planning to put in a trail. We are planning to put in a sauna. We're planning to put in a cold plunge, mm-hmm. A small pool. What else?
The stargazing platform on top of your water catchment tank.
Right. We're planning to put a stargazing deck on top of our rain catchment cistern. Mm-hmm. It'll be beautiful. We can't wait for all of it. And a food forest. We also have room for a food forest and bees that we'll be putting in.
Wow. So cool. You know, I had never heard of a Tadalact sauna. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. I think it kind of stems from the bathhouses, mm-hmm. In, I guess, Middle Eastern countries. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Cadillac basically is a lime plaster that is polished in a sense, and it becomes waterproof. Mm-hmm. And so we really wanted to work with materials that could be cleaned. Mm-hmm. And something like that won't harbor mold since it's made out of the lime. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how we decided on doing something like that. I know most saunas are made out of wood, mm-hmm. But a lot of people that are chemically sensitive can't really handle the terpenes from wood when they're heated.
Mm-hmm, the cedar.
So we really wanted to avoid that. And lime is very inert. Mm-hmm. But also it's not, you know, porous, mm-hmm. also like wood. And so, you know, when people are sweating and there's heat, you know, the wood is going to absorb anything that, you know, comes out of your sweat.
Right.
And as you know, as a health professional, you know, with sweat, there are also toxins. And so trying to avoid those things, you know, with, you know, wood sauna is what kind of really led us to wanting to do a Cadillac.
This is so awesome. I mean, you actually have really helped me with my own design for that because, yeah, I'm really, when people are environmentally sensitive, you can react to other people and you can react to their breath, their sweat. And so if you're sending someone into a sauna, they can pollute it with their, you know, their own detox process. So creating a sauna that can not get polluted and be help clean itself, essentially.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's wonderful. It makes me really optimistic about being able to pull one off here too. Cool.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
So you guys are working with quite a team. Your architect, your builder. Tell us about your architect.
So Gail Force, she is an architect in Austin, mm-hmm. and she specializes in natural building.
Okay.
Her whole, maybe not her whole career, I believe she started in commercial, she has been, I believe, for the last 20 years, been working on natural building projects.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All throughout Central Texas.
Okay.
So she's so knowledgeable around details, and she's so also knowledgeable around building science.
Uh-huh.
And how materials work together, and she was such an amazing, like, architect to find, given her experience,
mm-hmm.
In the natural world.
Wonderful.
She's helped build, natural buildings as well. She still helps buildings. She came here and helped build one of our, cottages. She spent a day with us doing one of our walls.
Mm-hmm.
And she just truly loves being part of not just the designing process, but, you know, the building process.
Right on. Rolling her sleeves up.
She's in her 70s and she's still just out there, you know, as much as she can, volunteering with friends and clients on the buildings that she designs. Yeah.
Okay. And her last name is Borst, B-O-R-S-T, Gail Borst.
Right.
Cool. Nice. Okay. And how about your contractor? You found someone who also had a lot of experience with natural building.
Yeah. So Brad King, he is our builder, and he has worked with all kinds of natural wall systems as well, from, compressed earth blocks to straw bales, mm-hmm. to light clay and straw, mm-hmm. I believe he's worked on. He has a huge interest in, you know, the wall system we're using with hempcrete,
mm-hmm.
In that he just really likes that it's so lightweight compared to, you know, other forms of natural building,
mm-hmm.
That it sequesters carbon and all of those things.
Right.
So he was really interested in our project, you know, when I first approached him, mm-hmm. years and years ago about it.
So cool. So
Yeah. So there's a podcast called the Building Science Podcast, and Christoph Irwin is the host, and he's also the principal of the mechanical engineering firm that I use to do the mechanical design for us on our cottages. And he's super passionate about hempcrete. And in, I think in one of the talks, he's got several different, several podcasts around natural building and hempcrete. But in one of them in there, he talks so eloquently about, you know, how hempcrete, you know, is, it's, you know, it's not just about the R value. It's about so much, so much more. It's about thermal mass. It's about the moisture regulating that it does. And yeah, he just, he's such a scientist and engineer, like, but he says it in such a way that's so beautiful.
Inspiring. Cool.
Yeah, it's totally inspiring. And, you know, given how science like minded he is, you would think he would just gravitate towards, you know, conventional building. But I believe he's building, he's going to be building his own home for him and his wife soon. And I believe it's going to be out of hempcrete because he believes in the product so much.
Oh, really, really cool.
So.
I was lucky enough to come and visit you, see the project in process, and you guys are partway through finishing the first of six houses. I just was blown away by it, and it really piqued my curiosity about hempcrete. I didn't know much about it. This is the first time I'd ever seen it in action. So let's get into the details of your houses. This house was extraordinary. What was the square footage of it?
I believe it's just under 500 square feet.
Okay.
On the inside. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the walls are quite thick there. It's framed with structural lumber, and then you basically put, you put the hempcrete, which is hemp hard mixed with lime. It's about the consistency of oatmeal, into this framework in the walls. And it's about 18 inch thick walls. Is that right?
It's 12 and a half inches.
12 and a half, okay.
That we decided on. But yeah, they're really thick. And so when everything's said and done, they'll be about 12 and a half inches.
Okay. And then when I got there, they were in the process of plastering the outside. It was a lime plaster, is that right?
Right. It's a lime plaster with some, we were trying to use as many local materials as we could. So all the lime that's in the hempcrete and that's in the plaster is local, just, I would say, 50 miles within Austin,
okay.
Something like that. Pretty close. So yeah, using those local materials was really, really important to us to support our local economy. But then also, you know, the cost of things. And so, yeah.
Transport and everything. So R values, what are your R values for the walls and roof?
So per inch, it'll vary between 1.5 and 2. So if we're looking at the entire wall system, you know, that would be between 25 and, you know, 27 R value.
Okay.
And then our ceiling, our roof system, I believe, is going to be about 43 R value.
Wonderful. So you had like hemp insulation board or something, is that right?
Hemp insulation board. Oh, no, that was the wood fiber board.
Okay.
Yeah, the yellow stuff you're talking about.
Yeah.
The yellow board stuff. Yeah. That was wood fiber insulation.
Okay, wood fiber insulation. Was there any hemp insulation in the roof?
Well, not above, on the outside of the sheathing. On the inside of the sheathing, we did put hemp bats.
Hemp what?
And so
bats. Okay.
Yeah. So those are hemp wool bats.
Hemp wool bats. Okay. So I didn't even know that existed. So it's basically like fiberglass insulation made out of hemp.
Yes. And so they used, instead of the shiv that you would use for the hempcrete, they used the actual like fiber that you get out of the hemp plant, and then they weave it all up in their machine like they do, you know, fiberglass. And yeah, it's like fluffy wool, like hemp wool, and they're, you know, they're bats.
Wow.
They're, you know, you can get them in different sizes, but our size is 24 inches.
Okay. All right. So you you have a metal roof and then a vapor barrier before the zip sheathing?
So yeah, so we've got, so there will be the metal roof and then we have some battens that create an airspace between our water barrier. And then the wood fiber goes under that. Mm-hmm. And then under that is the zip sheathing, which is also an air and water barrier. And then under that will be, you know, the inside space. Mm-hmm. And so inside there is the hemp wool bat. Mm-hmm. And then from there, there is pine tongue and groove.
I saw that.
And that, yeah, and that is treated with a lime wash. Mm-hmm. So if it ever does get wet, it won't mold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's beautiful.
Protecting the wood, protecting the wood, but also creating a barrier for any kind of, there. It's a kiln-dried wood, so it shouldn't have high amount of VOCs. Meaning terpenes that might be coming off of the pine. Mm-hmm. And so the thought is the lime wash will, in a sense, kind of damper any of that VOC. But also it's up above kind of the airspace. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, it's beautiful, too. Like groove, lime-washed pine, like vaulted ceilings was just beautiful. The lines of the ceiling were so elegant and so it was just gorgeous.
I'm glad you thought so. Yeah, the guys worked really hard on it. So
You can tell. Wow. All right, so you have a mech room in this building, and you're planning on doing that for each of the six builds. Tell us about the mech room.
Yeah, it was really important for us to have an area where the mechanicals would reside so that we could easily maintain, but also so that we could inspect everything. So all of our plumbing, all of our air conditioning equipment, of which we have a very robust system. We have an air conditioning system, but we also have a HEPA filter. We also have a fresh air system called an ERV, mm-hmm. and then we also have a dehumidifier. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to be able to inspect all of these, but also, like I said, to maintain them whenever they came to the end of their life, or in the sense of plumbing, if there was ever a leak, to easily be able to see that. Mm-hmm. But also in our mech room, we have a drain. And so that drain will be, you know, just awesome if we ever do have a leak, and all the water will go into the drain and not into our walls. And so we made a huge effort for our little mechanical room to also be able to create through wall penetration for the plumbing. Mm-hmm. So there really is no plumbing in our walls. It's all through plumbing. Mm. Yeah. And so everything is housed in there. And the hot water heater is in there as well. That was really, really important for us for the health of the building and for easily maintaining it.
Beautiful. Is this grid-tied electric?
It is. The electric is grid tied. The only, the septic and the water catchment aren't utilities that we have out here, but we do have electric.
Uh-huh. Are you planning any solar for any part of your project?
We will eventually, but it's not a priority for us because since we are grid tied, we do have the option of purchasing solar, utility solar. Mm-hmm. So we've done that for this project. It'll be one of those things we do once everything else is done.
Oh, I see. So your grid offers solar as a delivery option. Like the source of your grid-tied electric is solar.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with your hempcrete house, what kind of foundation did you go with?
Well, we really wanted to use as little concrete as possible. We worked with our engineers and they were able to create like a stem wall kind of footing so we wouldn't have to use a slab. Most people in Texas for their foundations use a slab. And so we also added a product called Zypex to our concrete. And that helps with any kind of vapor drive that comes up from you know, any moisture in the ground.
Okay.
And luckily, we've got very rocky soil, meaning maybe not rocky is the right word, but our ground is mostly limestone. And so our foundation goes about 8 inches into that limestone. Mm-hmm. And so that limestone is incredibly draining. There's no water that usually will stay on the ground for long in this area because it just seeps through our limestone aquifer.
So interesting. Yeah. Like, so lime plaster is sort of moisture regulating inside a built environment. Is that true of the limestone that you build on too? Is there like any kind of moisture regulation property?
There may be. What I do know about limestone is it's very porous. Mm-hmm. So unlike a clay soil that, you know, holds water, this is almost opposite. Water just literally goes right through it.
Right, cool.
So we rarely around here have any puddles, any place that really holds moisture. Mm-hmm. Around the house, the retreat house, there is, you know, some soil, and really that's kind of one of the few places that we will see, you know, a puddle after a very, very, very hard rain.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. But most rains in this area, I mean, it just will not stay on top of the ground. It will be absorbed by, it will just go through the limestone. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and that's something we didn't really plan on when we got here, but we discovered it and thought, oh my God, this is amazing.
That's cool. You know? Yeah. Yeah, so, your place is beautiful. I felt so good there.
Yeah.
The air felt so clean. The environment felt so pristine. It's just going to be wonderful for the people that come stay with you.
Thank you.
So, you know, when you're dealing with building biology, when you're building for people who are environmentally sensitive, there's lots of options. You know, natural building is the natural solution, you know, because this is the best kind of house that you can live in. As a human being, you know, it's just those of us who are sensitive can feel stuff that other people can't necessarily feel, but is affecting them. So there's still a lot of options in the natural building world. There's compressed earth block, there's adobe, there's cob, there's rammed earth. What was it about hempcrete that made you want to go with that for your building material?
Well, given our hot, humid climate, I was incredibly concerned about mold. It is so easy for, you know, mold to happen in a conventionally built house.
Mm-hmm.
And so hempcrete does, you know, several things that help with mitigating for mold.
Mm-hmm.
One, because of its vapor permeability, it's very vapor open.
Yeah.
It allows moisture to redistribute. So if we ever do have, you know, when we do have really humid days, you know, the hempcrete, the material itself, will work to regulate the humidity.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the environment, which is something that our conventional materials that we build with now cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
The materials cannot do work like that.
Right.
So, you know, once you understand those properties, you're just like, oh my gosh, you know, like, why wouldn't any house be built like this?
Mm-hmm.
Or every house be built like
mm-hmm.
this?
Mm-hmm.
And so the materials themselves are doing so much work around moisture regulation on the inside. But also, hemp is a fast growing plant, and it's, you know, it's a renewable resource. And so, you know, that aspect of, you know, supporting our farmers and using a material that's minimally processed, unlike other products that are highly processed petroleum products. And so, for me, staying away from petroleum products was kind of a big thing as well.
Right.
So that's another reason I really, you know, liked hemp.
Mm-hmm.
But then the fact that you can, you know, once you're done with it, you can just put it back into the ground.
Mm-hmm. You know? A biodegradable house. We love this. Yes.
Yeah.
That breathes.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I love that about it. And I know those are some of those qualities are the same for all, you know, natural buildings. But I guess the thing for me around the moisture regulating thing, given our climate, mm-hmm. I felt was so appropriate for where we are. And the fact that we have local materials here to get to work with this hemp. Mm-hmm. Unlike for us, you know, getting clay, we would need to go maybe an hour outside of the city to find some good clay east of Austin. So yeah, I guess those are the kind of big things there.
Yeah, I can see it. And, you know, it feels really different. It felt really good inside your house to be inside a house that's made from natural materials that breathes just qualitatively feels so much better than a regular house to me and to a lot of people.
I agree.
After I came and visited your project, I found a link on the Next City website about a project that's happening in Minnesota with the Lower Sioux Tribe. They basically have created an integrated vertical operation where they are doing all three steps. They are growing the hemp, they are manufacturing and processing the hemp into herds so it can be usable, and then they're building houses. And this is the only place in the United States where this is happening. I was really intrigued by this project because of the sovereignty it offers. I mean, what an incredible example of local economy and economic development on a local level of a way, you know, helping people help themselves. And this project is, it's just extraordinary. It took them 8 years to get any kind of consensus. And what they first did was they built a little concession stand on their powwow field. And there was so much resistance. But once this little concession stand was built, everybody was like, oh my God, you know, and this is what I'm hoping will help happen with our project and your project, that it's three-dimensional common sense. People see it and they're like, oh, now I get it. And so then once they had everybody on board with the idea of, like, we can grow hemp more than one harvest a year, we can process it into our own building material, and we can build our own houses. They built a duplex in 14 days last July.
Yeah.
And amazing. So I just wanted to just read a couple of paragraphs from this article, and I'll post the link to the article in the show notes because it's so inspiring, that just talks about the qualities of hemp. So Pendleton, who is the vice president of the tribal council that, you know, spearheaded this whole project, he was intrigued to learn that the bamboo-like plant has 25,000 uses, including wood substitutes, biofuel, bioplastics, animal feed, and textiles. Hemp can grow in a variety of climates and, depending on the location, can yield more than one harvest a year. What's more, hemp regenerates the soil, it sequesters carbon as it's growing, and it doesn't require fertilizers. People often confuse hemp with its cannabis cousin, marijuana, but hemp has negligible THC, or the psychoactive component that creates a weed high. And this stalky variant is more versatile than the cannabis type. Hempcrete is made by mixing mashed stalks with lime and water. The mashed stalks are called hurd, H-U-R-D. The resulting oatmeal-like substance is stuffed or sprayed into the cavities of framed walls. And once it hardens, it resembles cement to the touch, thus the name. But it has different properties. The petrified substance has airtight qualities that can dramatically cut down on heating and air conditioning needs. Unlike many commonly used building materials, it is non-toxic and resists mold, fire, and pets. It's really extraordinary stuff.
It is.
Yeah.
Totally.
So there's another architect in Texas named Elizabeth Hurtado of Hurtado Homes. I think she designs for Lisa Mori up in Colorado. And she posted a diagram of a compressed earth block wall schematic that had the compressed earth block as the structural component of the wall, and then 4 inches of blown on hempcrete insulation on the outside to achieve the R value that is required by code. I shared that diagram with you, right?
Yes.
So cool.
Awesome.
Are you going to experiment in your next 5 builds, or are you going to continue the same build that you are doing right now? Do you think there'll be any evolution in how you use hemp?
Yeah, I think there will be. Between things like the spray applied hempcrete, and then there's also hempcrete blocks. We're looking at those as well. Much like, I guess Hurtado used kind of hemp blocks on the inside with, you know, the spray applied on the outside. I think it'll make things go a lot faster.
The hemp block, now that's really intriguing. As far as I understand, those are not structural. You still have to frame the house, and then you fill in, you know, in between the uprights with the blocks. But they're like big Legos. Have you ever seen one?
Yes, I've seen them. And yeah, you just you put it on the inside. You know, in our case, with a framed wall, you would put it on the inside of the framed wall, and then on the outside, you do a spray to apply, is what I would envision. Obviously, my builder would have to, you know, look at the details on that.
Right.
But something like that also, I feel like, would improve, like, our worker safety, just because even though these are natural, non-toxic products or, you know, materials, once they've dried, when they're wet, lime is very caustic. And so people building with it do need to wear PPE. And in the Texas heat, that sometimes is really uncomfortable for them. So, you know, my builders this summer were working in 100-plus weather for months. Literally, there was 70-plus days of triple-digit weather in Texas while they were installing the hempcrete.
And humidity.
And there's the humidity as well. And so, you know, if we were to have less, you know, hempcrete to actually be formed, you know, I feel that would improve, you know, their safety, their comfort, you know.
Absolutely. I think if you introduce the idea of the prefabricated hempcrete blocks, I think your builder would go for it.
So yes, it's an evolution. You know, we hope to all learn from all the buildings that we do here, and we hope to pass that on to whoever comes to visit and, you know, wants to build in this way. You know, we hope to support anybody that wants to do something like this.
Oh man, I am just so behind you. I'm like so in your fan club. I'm definitely going to come back and see it as it progresses.
Can't wait to have you again.
Yeah. So you and Chris have this dream. This is like your forever home. You're going to be doing this for life, right? This is your vision.
This is our life work.
You're like, wonderful. Who do you imagine hosting? Like, you're going to have capacity to host basically mini conferences or like week-long retreats for, who are you imagining?
You know, we would like to work with maybe practitioners, medical practitioners that are maybe training, you know, other practitioners. We're also hoping to host maybe weddings or bigger parties around here.
Wonderful. It's so cool to have an option like this, because I think everybody is becoming aware that when you're trying to get a bunch of people together, there's always a few people that are too sensitive for the location that you're picking. It just is the way of things right now, that there are more and more sensitive people, and this people who are sensitive are getting more and more sensitive. So just having projects like my project and your project, I think, gives people hope that there will be solutions in the near future for people to heal and really understand how this works, that we have to be really intentional about creating indoor environments that support our health, that support not just our health, the health of our plants and our animals and our children and our older people. Because when we're not thinking about it and we're just living in the de facto conventional way, we're getting exposed to so many unnecessary indoor air toxins that are weighing down on our health. And a lot of people don't know about this and don't think it's a factor. It is a factor. It's only the people who have crashed, like your mother and like me and a whole bunch of my friends, that really look behind the curtain and figure out how this works and create solutions so that it won't happen to the next generation. So I applaud the work you're doing. I'm so in your fan club. I can't wait to see how your development continues, and I wish you the very best of luck in this project. So let us know, Nora, how people can get a hold of you. How can they find you on the web?
So we're at flourishhere.com. Mm-hmm. And then you can follow along our progress with the cottages on our Instagram.
And can people find your socials through your website?
Yes, they can.
Okay, great. Flourishhere.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Nora. I really appreciate your time and your project, and I wish you the very best of luck.
Thank you so much, Holly, for chatting with me. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Our show for you today. Thanks so much for joining us for the Crooked Forest podcast. Be sure to hop on over to crookedforestinstitute.org to subscribe and keep in touch with what we're up to. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next time.